Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Man Cave. Every last Friday of every month, Steven 76 and myself get together to talk about anything we want. How you doing, Steven?
Doing good. How you doing?
I'm okay. It's hot out in California. It's 100-something degrees here right now.
Yeah, I heard about that. So I'm not going to complain about how hot it is here, but, I'm from Ohio, so hot to me is different.
Yeah, I tried that humidity once, and I didn't like it much. The dry heat is what I'm used to.
Humidity's
down. Yeah, I visited Florida in February. It was miserable. But pause that. So we're going to talk about anything we want to. What about that submarine? Can you imagine being that far down and imploding? Oh my God.
Yeah. From what I read, he said it's like.
You broke, Steven. What?
Well, I was saying that from what I read, it says that it's very likely they didn't feel a thing.
Oh, I'm sure they didn't. It happened so fast, like a tin can just crushed.
Yeah.
But I'm surprised that it had a billionaire on it and his son. My God, what are they doing on it? There are plenty of good pictures of the Titanic. Why would you want to do that?
Right. Yeah, it's time to let sleeping ghosts fly.
Yeah, really. Let somebody else take the pictures. But I guess it's the fact of doing it. Why'd you climb Everest? Because it was there. It'd be a while before anybody else goes down there, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah, they just lost some serious tourist business.
A little bit. I wonder if it's going to have any effect on the space trips that some civilians can buy going to orbit.
Yeah, I don't know.
Twice.
Really, Shatner got up there first, so he finally really got out there.
I looked up something here.
I do have a message from you. I have a message for you from Deb saying that she did add Pee Wee's SoundCloud, so you might have to refresh the studio for it.
Okay. What did the horse say after it tripped?
Oh, boy. I should probably know, but I don't know.
Help. I've fallen and I can't giddy up.
That's terrible.
Why can't you hear a pterodactyl going to the bathroom? Because the pee is silent.
Okay. Silent. I was going to go a little more serious and say maybe because.
Yeah.
Unless they made a new one with the genes from a frog.
How do you make an egg roll?
I don't know, put it on a hill?
You push it, yeah. Push it.
I started getting ready to go into a recipe.
I love Egg Foo Young. But let's see. Why don't we, you wanted to read something. Why don't you introduce it, what it's about, and go ahead and fire it up.
Yeah, let me real quick run over here.
Sure.
And grab it. I recently had a book published. It's not a poetry book. It's fiction. And I think I grabbed it. I'll find out in a second here. There you go. I left chapter one on the site, and in the author's notes is the link to go and buy it if you want. The book is called The Eerie Depths. It takes place right out here on Lake Erie. And I'll just say that most people figure out what's going on in the first chapter, but they don't know what happens after. But fishermen are disappearing out on the lake, and the Coast Guard has to try to figure out what the hell's going on. So that's basically what the book is about. And like I said, it's called The Eerie Depths, and this is chapter one. Do you have it, Hatter, or do you need me to wait?
I'm running over there as we speak. Grab it. I picked something else up, and I lost the browser. Let me get it. Come on. What the hell? Come on. I made a mistake and put in and downloaded a game, and it overloaded my phone, so I dumped it out. Here we go.
Wow.
And there. I got
it. All right, so this is The Eerie Depths, Chapter 1. Sunday, late morning, October 22nd. He had read the article in the local newspaper. He had seen the stories on the news, all the fishing boats found out here with no one in them, three of them found in the last month, just empty hulls rocking back and forth on the waves of Lake Erie. His wife didn't like the idea of him being out here all alone because of that. But he told her it was probably just a bunch of idiots who drank too much and fell over into the water. Her argument was the fact that no bodies had been found to date. But he shrugged her off by smiling, kissing her on the cheek, and promising walleye for dinner this evening. He was going to keep that promise, too. He already had two good ones in the cooler and was just getting ready to finish his third pass past the Lorraine Lighthouse. One more pass towards home, he thought, as he made a wide turn away from shore, and I'll call it a day. The sun was beginning to climb high into the sky, and fish rarely bite from now until late evening. He looked back to make sure his planer boards weren't going to tangle up. He grinned, seeing they were keeping their respective distance from each other, and straightened out his 22-foot crestliner. It was the most comfortable he had been cruising due east. The sun was no longer below the brim of his Cleveland Indians baseball cap, so he no longer had to squint. He gazed across the horizon, not another boat in sight. This made him smile inside and out. The entire lake seemed to belong to him. Earlier this morning, that was not the case, as one dumbass almost rammed him. Well, he thought, not almost, but still way too close. He looked around again to make sure he was all alone. Then he looked straight up at the sun, threw his arms out and yelled, "I'm king of the lake!" Just then his fish finder started chirping, short little chirps that grew into long, drawn-out electronic screeches. He looked at the screen to see a giant blob of pixelated fins. "Too big for a walleye," he whispered under his breath. "Maybe a sturgeon?" Just then the release clip on the port side let go of its line. The fishing rod curled to a near 90-degree angle. He put the rope loops over the knob of the steering wheel to keep the boat straight, throttled back slightly, and got up. He pulled the rod from its holder and felt a tremendous weight on the other end. "Jesus," he shouted, trying to get control. He reeled in as he lowered the rod and pulled back on it to bring this monster fish in closer. He kept the process going, reeling and raising, reeling and raising. It was a hell of a weight, but seemed more like a dead weight with no fight. After what seemed an hour, he finally saw his clip weight break the surface. "I almost got you," he wheezed, "whatever the hell you are." Then he thought he heard singing, beautiful singing coming from out over the water. He stopped reeling and looked around, trying to discern where it was coming from. There were still no other boats in sight, but still there was someone singing, someone very near. He shook his head vigorously and pulled back on the rod again. That is when he saw something, something trailing behind the clip weight, something that looked like hair, his voice cracked. A big tangled ball of blonde hair. His mind raced. Had he just found one of the missing boaters? At that moment, there came a huge tug from the other end of the line. It pulled him towards the stern and began to pull him into the water. He let go of the rod, but too late. He had lost his balance and toppled over the side and into the chilly October water. He didn't go too deep before turning and swimming back to the surface. He bobbed in the waves as he watched his boat leave him behind, and he wished he had put on his life jacket. He was more than a mile out in 59-degree water. He wasn't in danger of hypothermia, but it was going to be a long swim. Then he heard that singing again. It sounded like it was coming from right behind him. He jerked around to confront it, but there was nothing there. The singing stopped. He turned back towards shore and began to swim. After getting just a few feet, he felt something grab him by the ankle and pull him under. He turned to see something beautiful, and then he saw the teeth. End chapter.
What is it? What is it?
Oh, you'd have to buy the book.
I gotta buy the book. That's why they call it Lake Erie.
Exactly.
Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Jesus. Too big for the walleye. Yeah, it's that last pass, man.
It's always that one last time.
Yeah, you described it well. I remember we'd go out. I'd go out with my dad. It was funny. My dad was forcibly retired because he had a stroke, and he had to relearn to talk. Because that's what he did, was lectures on illegal money transactions. He was a cop. Anyway. My mom, I went over there to visit one day, and my mom goes, "You got to get him out of the house. He's driving me crazy. Can you take him fishing?" My dad was a steelhead salmon fisher. He'd fish the rivers. I had 12-foot aluminum boat and was fishing the local lake, Lake Folsom, and learned it very good on how to catch fish and where to find them. So I took my dad out, and we knocked him dead within 2 weeks. My dad had a 18-foot tri-hull, with a trailer. He had lead core line. That's what we used. We didn't use the downriggers, but the lead core line. Bought himself a whole rig and everything, and then I tell you, we fished for years after that. And your mom thanked me for it again. I said, "Hey, I got a new boat out of it." You know, dude. Yeah, anytime. He was like a kid on Christmas, just like catching fish.
Yeah, the way I described it, that's the way me and my dad used to catch the walleye out there on Lake Erie with the planer boards. And that we used the dipsy divers, too.
Yeah, and you got to be on the lake at dawn.
Yeah, or late in the evening. That's usually when it seemed like we would go.
Call it the evening chew.
Yeah. I would like to really quick say, just in case anybody's listening, the book, The Erie Depths, is available at Amazon.com, Goodreads.com, or BarnesandNoble.com. So again, called The Erie Depths, and it's by me, but not my pen name. It's by my real name, Michael Bushnell.
No, you're not. Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, thank you. That was great. Is that the first chapter? What chapter is it?
That is the first chapter. That's how it starts out.
Wow. Did a good job describing it. Setting it up. How about setting it up? You know, I'm wondering if I could read something. First, I want to say, anybody listening that would like to call in, share a story or a question or share anything, number here is 1-646-668-2837. That's 1-646-668-2837. And that was so well written, I want to share a story also.
All right.
Do that. Share a story. Where is it? There it is. It's called The Dogs of Night. I don't know if you remember. I was, it was like late 1970s, and I was just healing from a bad accident that I was in. And I decided I was going to hitchhike through the western states of the United States. So I got a one-way ticket to SeaTac, Washington, up in the corner of the country, got off the plane and started hitchhiking through Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, Utah, Nevada, California, and that's it. I didn't go any further than that. But there was one night I was leaving Caldwell, Idaho, and I had to go. This was entering the Nevada desert from the north, and I had a map. I had bought a map. Well, pay attention when you do that. Pay attention to what year the map is been printed, because this map didn't show highways that were more frequented by being thicker lines. That's such a natural thing, but they just had big lines. Anyway, I'm reading this map. It's early afternoon. I've got some ground to cover. Now, through the map, I've got to go to this highway intersection. As the crow flies, it's about 10 miles. Following the highway, I got to go back like 20, 30 miles east and then come back west and see the way. So I said, well, you know what? If I just walk down this highway, I'm sure there's going to be some lights or some town or something. So I started walking. And this is what happened. I traveled through the western states. Hitchhiking was not a safe way to travel, but I had decided to take a chance and see as much of the country as I could while I was still young. I had just left a small town in southern Idaho near the Nevada border with a newly purchased map in hand. Most maps mark frequently traveled roads with thicker lines, so you would know to avoid the roads that had little traffic. This map did not have thicker lines, Idaho, right? Finding yourself on a road that was not traveled was not a good place to find yourself in the Nevada desert that night. It was beginning to be late afternoon, and I found myself with a decision to make. I could head east, which would send me 40 miles in the wrong direction, or head southwest, which was 10 miles as the crow flies. The roads were straight, and you could see it disappear over one rise, then another. I decided to go as the crow flies, southwest. I could jog 10 miles if I had to. So I headed down the road at the fast pace with the thought of just over the next rise, I will see a town. One rise led to the next, and after the third hill was reached, there was still no town. Nothing was nothing but desert ahead, and nothing but desert ahead of me, and it looked like 20 miles of nothing. With no signs of a town and no vehicles in sight, it was evident I had made a bad decision. I was going to lose daylight soon. I was to make another decision. Keep walking and pray there is something down the road to turn back to when the two highways intersect. At least there was traffic on the highway, so I would turn. So I turned back. I turned my back to the sun and headed back the way I came. As I walked down the middle of the road, my shadows grew longer, and I had walked several hours before turning back, so I knew it would be dark when I got there. And I'm heading to the four corners. I picked up my pace to a slow jog, trying to convince myself everything was going to be fine. It would only be a few more minutes before I could see the highway. I started thinking of my Uncle Frank had told me about being alone at night in the secluded parts of the country. He told me about how mountain lions would stalk you, and when they figured out that you were not a threat to them. They considered you prey. He also told stories of pack dogs and coyotes taking down a steer if hungry enough. On the farm, we always had a weapon of sorts with us. So for the first time, I realized I had nothing that even resembled a weapon. I picked up the pace a little more. The thoughts of dogs and coyotes and mountain lions became all too real as the last of the sun disappeared. I was going to be defenseless in the dark on a road I had never been on before. My imagination started to play tricks on me, so I thought. When the dark came, I realized there was no moon. No moon. Hell, this was bad. This was bad, a lot worse than I thought. I kept moving, and only the crunch of my boots on the asphalt could be heard. Oh my God, I thought, why did I not know this? I had not been without a place to sleep through this whole trip up to now. Moonless night away from the city is as black as you might think, but due to the heat of the day, there was a haze overhead, so I could not see the stars. Could not see my hand in front of my face. Could not see the road that I was walking on. Words of my Uncle Frank echoed through my bones, and the first time I had heard it, I stopped to listen. There it was, yelps in the distance, dogs or coyotes. I wasn't sure as I started walking slow as to make as little noise as possible. The last thing I wanted was a pack of vicious dogs stalking me. As I kept on a medium pace walking on the crown of the road, I could hear them getting closer to me. I wasn't sure if they were coyotes or dogs or both. All I know for sure is there were several of them, and they were getting close enough to hear me. The gravel on the road as my boots walked over them seemed magnified. So I slowed down again, praying that they had not heard my footsteps. I stopped to get a feel of where they were. I could hear them sniffing of the lead animal. He was that close to me. I squatted down, moving my head back and forth so my ears could locate them. The yelping had gotten louder and louder, but suddenly stopped. I rose up and began to walk as silently as I could, but it was quite clear that they now knew that I was there. I had not felt fear like this before. Visions of being taken down by a pack of animals shook me to the core. What if I just kept walking and ignored them? Maybe they'll go away, right? Maybe act like I didn't care. Maybe I could. Then the yelps began again. It sounded like just two of them at first, then a third, then more. They were communicating with each other. They knew where I was. They knew I was alone, and they knew they could smell my fear. I was sure of it. Coming from my right and behind me, the pack had paced me now, or directly to my left. I was at the mercy of these nightmarish hounds, and I did not know what to do. I could see the headlines: California man is found torn apart by wild canines in southern Idaho. God help me, please! I begged him to make me strong. I pleaded with him to give me a weapon so I could at least fend off my killers. And it wasn't long before I could hear them on the right side of the road, even closer. Then came the reality: they were stalking me, and I could not see them. Many scenarios rushed through my head. I found myself kicking on the side of the road, hoping to find something, anything I could hold in my hands. With no luck, I tried to focus on where I was on the road. The next time I hear them on the road, I thought, I'm going to face my enemy and charge them, hopefully scatter them to show them that I'm a threat, and they better leave me alone. I made one last plea to God, give me strength, that I might not fear my fate, but accept it as his will. Then how do I fight something I cannot see? I was doomed, and I knew it. Just one more yelp, and I'm going to face these demons and pray they leave me alone. I had made peace with my God, and I felt that I could maybe take two of them two of them with me. Just keep moving and kicking and kicking, and keep telling myself. The yelping was louder and seemed to be closer. It sounded like they were just feet away, just feet behind me. I could hear them clicking of their nails on the road. If only I could see them, I could have the fighting chance. I wrapped one arm around my jacket so I might fend off the first wave. Don't go down, I kept telling myself. Stay standing, and I might have a better chance surviving this night. Then I saw it. The mountains miles ahead of me started glowing. I could see the outline of the mountains ahead of me. My pace got quicker, and the yelps started again. The dogs were now matching my speed, and hearing them talk to each other made me feel so small. Fear again overwhelmed me. The fleeting peace I had was leaving me. I was to be eaten alive by dogs. I wanted to cry, but I knew that I had got to show fear. They could smell it. With one last prayer, I saw it. It was small at first, but it got larger and larger with each passing second. The dark was getting lighter. It glowed through the haze that hid the stars. Then I saw it. It was the biggest moon I'd ever seen. It was rising over the mountains to give me light, to fight, to live. Complete darkness had turned into day before my eyes. The moon was huge, and all I could think of were these demon dogs. And now I could stop and fight. I stood in the highest part of the highway with the moon behind me, lighting up my battlefield. The sounds stopped. I could barely see the rustling of the sage around me. I stood up at the crest of the road and raised my backpack over my head and screamed. With every ounce of my being, I screamed. I screamed like a prisoner waiting for the gallows to fall. I screamed like a warrior raising his sword before striking down his first victim. I screamed with no fear, made myself as large as possible. My silhouette against the moon would look much larger and present myself as a danger to anything that would come within my sword's reach. And it happened. The yelps, the rustling, the killers were leaving. I could hear them hurting away from me. Could not feel anything at that moment. I only knew my prayers had been answered. I looked back at the moon for the first time. I saw it as a wonder, a beacon of hope, a savior of my life. I started walking towards the light, which just saved my life. I could feel myself smile. I could feel myself filled with the life again. I was alive, and for the first time in my life, I walked for what seemed like only 10, 15 minutes before I saw headlights. They were coming from the south, from the north. The Four Corners was not far. I started running. I ran as fast as I could, not knowing how far it was to the intersection of the highway. I had to be there when the headlights got there, or it would pass me by. I was the wind of the night, carrying a backpack. I was there a minute before the truck's headlights hit me. The lights slowed, and then I ran up to the door, not waiting to be asked if I needed a ride. I jumped in. I think I scared the driver. I think I scared the driver, and I talked for about an hour to the stranger about what had just happened to me. All I could speak of were the dogs of the night. It was 1979. I was alone for the first time. I realized how precious life was and how fast it could be taken. In the worst possible way, the dogs of the night was the reoccurring dream nightmare for years. That's what happened to me.
Yeah, that's some that's some scary shit.
Yeah, the things that go through your head. You know, maybe they were just curious. Maybe they weren't stalking me, but in my mind, I was in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I think that would have been in my mind, too, because it's a good thing the moon came out.
Now, we have one recording. Let me get back to the studio. There we are.
Yeah.
Go all the way back.
I'll grab the moon.
Get back over here. Okay. Oh, I don't see it. Let me refresh. think it's by Pee Wee, isn't it?
Yes. Getting the link for him. He's on the board right now, too. But I don't think he's listening yet because he doesn't have a link, but I just dropped it for him.
Okay. All right. And I'm going to go ahead and start it.
I don't know if we want to give him a second to get a...
Sure. I see she loaded one from Rocketeer. Did he post one, too? Looks like it. Oh, Titus for Rocketeer. Oh, no, that was... Never mind. For Man Cave. Okay. Yeah, we only have the one. Okay, ready?
Yep, he says he's good.
Okay, here we go. Nature would look at the atomic bomb like, what the hell is that? I can't conceive.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I thought, it's first off, hell of a read. I think it's a hard hitting piece that just seems to keep getting darker and darker with each stanza. It's just like,
yeah.
you don't think it get darker, but it does each time. It's a pretty cool piece.
Yeah. Nitroglycerin and hydrogen to nitrogen, explosions of bigger boom to the end. If you see ever seen the Michael Jackson video of the Earth song, it's like that. It shows the killing of the elephants and the other animals.
I'm not sure if I have seen it.
Yeah, you don't get the one where it's live. You get the studio. His Earth song. I saw it. I was sort of impressed. You know, the extinction thing. I don't want to sound like I'm for against animals that are endangered, but throughout history, extinctions go on all the time. They do. We don't want to be part of the extinction, and shame on for man doing that. But it's not as uncommon as it seems to be. You know, you talk extinction, apparently it's immediate tragedy, and in a sense it is, but it is a fact of nature. Extinctions and species come and go all the time.
Yeah, that's true. There are so many times, though, that, you know, I don't think it would have happened if it wasn't for us.
Absolutely. You know, and there are things we don't even know. We probably extinct. You know, the Tasmanian lion, the one that's extinct, they have pictures of it. They think they found it some in Tasmania.
There's a bird they recently found too. I can't remember where that they thought was extinct, but they found it. Can't remember what the kind of bird it was though.
I believe it's some of the tribes in Tasmania are still talking about seeing them, but they're not extinct. I guess there's a lot of that part of the world hasn't been sort of like the Amazon. Hasn't been explored.
Yeah,
there's
Skull Island with the giant ape.
There you go. Yeah, one you can never find when you try. I heard also the depths were going down to in the ocean. They're finding a whole ecosystem. They found an underwater lake. I don't know, temperature, pressure, or anything, but the freshwater, saltwater isn't mixing. So they found this whole ecosystem of all these creatures we don't know anything about, all these living organisms and stuff, fish that they were finding. I mean, they say there's 95% or something of the ocean we haven't even tried to explore. 95%, that's huge for something that is most of the planet.
There's depths that I don't think we'll ever get down to. Who knows? Maybe Megalodon is down there somewhere.
The guys have been down there. There was one dude that said that he was down there, that all he saw was an eye and some teeth. And he swears he'd never gone back. He goes,
Yeah, I wouldn't go back either.
Yeah, some guys live for that. There's a guy that I can't remember his name, and I see him on Joe Rogan all the time. He's an explorer. The dude looks 22 years old, but he gets to go on these trips trying to find extinct species. And one of them, he's the one that reported about the Tasmanian lion, a Tasmanian tiger. I'm sorry, it's a tiger, Tasmanian tiger. And he was going to go down and investigate that, but he'd gone looking for the flying dinosaur, Tyrannosaurus. No, anyway, there's reports of that in the Andes. So he got the down with his exposition. I mean, how do you get a job like that?
Yeah.
Go look for Yeti, but
anything
extinct?
My dream job. That guy had that show for a while there, Jeremy Wade with River Monsters. My God, I mean, that'd be a great job.
I used to watch that all the time when I had cable. Think of the traveling.
Yeah.
You pretty harsh conditions, but yeah, that would be a freaking good job. River monsters.
Yeah. Fish on.
What's that?
I said fish on.
Oh yeah, fishing in. Yeah, we have the American River below Lake Nimbus is where the water lets out. That's as far up the American River the fish can go before that's the first fish hatchery. So in this fall, it's the stand around the big sand gravel bar, you know, shoulder to shoulder. They stand out there and hook these salmon that are backing up. I've done it a couple times years ago. Got some nice, 25 pounders.
Yeah.
But that's shoulder to shoulder. Everybody's going, fish on. So you got some up and jerk across the on the other side where it was sheer cliffs, and he's going in snagging everybody. That was always good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to like the people that don't do it the right way. I remember about 3 or 4 weeks ago, Kay and I were up at our favorite park, and we had the radio on in the car. We hadn't gotten out of the car yet, and there's a guy called the radio station to request a song, and he said, I'm out here fishing and trying to catch rainbow trout, and the DJ said, oh, yeah, how many you got? How you doing? He says, oh, I got 15 of them now. I'm off the board. I was like thinking, wait a minute. I do believe that's over the limit, and you're just talking about it on the radio.
Yeah. Yeah, what are you wearing? What kind of boots? Yeah, my dad always told the story that when he was a kid, we lived in Placerville, the old gold town, and they were out fishing in one of the local foothill lakes, because he knew this game warden was watching them. They knew he sat up on this bar and freaking binoculars and watched. So my dad and my Uncle Ken in this boat took this burlap sack and cut the bottom out of it and tied it to the back of the boat. So every time they caught a fish, they dropped it in the burlap sack. And they were locking them dead. They must have said, they 20, 30 a piece they threw in that bag, and this game warden watched the whole thing. At the end of the day, the game warden met him at the boat ramp. Thought they had busted. He reaches over there, and he says, well, where's the fish? He goes, what fish? We don't have any fish. He goes, I've been watching you catch fish for all day. He goes over to the boat, lifts up the burlap sack. There's nothing there. Because he was pissed. Because I'm very nice. Yeah, I miss my dad. Whenever something bad would happen, I got laid off one time. I've never been fired, but I got laid off one time. It was a great job, and I was really bummed. I went over my dad, and I go, let's go salmon fishing. So we go down to San Francisco, go out and hook up some salmon. So that was the answer, was fishing.
Yeah, I gotta get off the chair, man. I haven't gone in years.
Yeah, the old gentleman next door where I'm at now, he got sick and he passed away. And I got to know him a little bit before he left. Found out he was a target shooter. He had all sorts of guns and he was an outdoorsman. So his wife was going through his stuff and put it out for a garage sale. I said, well, how much for the camping stuff? Because all my camping stuff got stolen by some tweakers or something. And he said, she sold it to me like for nothing. She gave me a lot of it. But I got like 50 poles, rods and reels. I got it's a big box with a lid of camping stuff. I mean, you would go where there's no campgrounds type of camping stuff, real survivalist stuff. And got a whole bunch of, so I'm thinking, well, I don't need 50 poles. I went to and got some nice ones, redid them, and got to figure out where to donate these other poles. They don't have the fishing derbies like they around here like they used to.
Yeah. I got a lot of camping stuff and a lot of fishing stuff out of my shed, because when my dad passed away, I inherited all of his fishing equipment, and it's out there in the shed. Well, one's a fly rod, but I have no idea how to use it, and I really want to learn how. You just gotta...
Do it. Yeah, do it in your front yard. You can practice it. It's one good thing about learning that is you don't need water to practice.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually a field up the road. I keep thinking I'm going to take it over there and give it a shot.
There you go. Gotta do
it. I remember when I was young, I remember the first time I ever saw somebody using a fly rod, and I was like wondering, what the heck is this guy doing? And I was trying to explain to my friends, what he was doing, and they're going, they didn't understand. So I took my regular rod, and I started going back and forth with a lure on it, and it ended up catching me behind the ear.
There you go. Yeah, I've always wanted to try. I've done it a couple times, only once on the river. Yeah, you get tangled easy.
Yeah.
But it is relaxing. Tying the flies. I used to make my own lures.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, Stephen, do you want to go over what's coming up on a poetic slice of life?
Poetic slice of life. Well, I guess I'll plug this one. Our next show is actually my birthday party.
That's right, July.
My birthday is next Thursday, but Wednesday we're going to do a special edition of Sci Friday. Kate put it in there that, you know, we've done my favorite movies, which is like The Green Mile and Jaws, and did my favorite Star Trek movie, The Wrath of Khan. So this year we're going to focus on my second favorite Star Trek movie, which is Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. So we're going to do quotes from The Undiscovered Country, and or just drop on by and say hi.
Yeah. Yeah. July. Birthdays.
Yep. It's that time of year.
I can't remember what it was. You've watched Almost Famous, right?
Almost Famous. I think so. It sounds familiar.
Oh, you gotta watch it. It's with Kate Hudson. It's got Philip Thomas, Philip Thomas Seymour.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he's in it. Yeah, you gotta see it. It's one of my favorite movies. Soundtrack's in. It's great.
I'll have to look it up. Right now, I got.
Yeah, a kid gets on. Writing for by fluke, just by mail and over the phone, he gets a job with Rolling Stone magazine, and he's actually traveling around with a band called Sweetwater. And through that, they hit on what the life is like with a Penny Lane, as Kate has a groupie, and she doesn't like being called groupie. She's a band aide. Travels around, but it's a great movie.
I'll have to look it up. Right now, I got DVDs that a friend of mine at work let me borrow, so I've been watching the Evil Dead series.
Ah, I went and bought the whole X-Files seasons. I got it online for $30.
That's a great one. I'd have a hard time trying to figure out what my favorite episode is, but I always seem to think about that one gated community where if one little thing was wrong with your house, the monster would come and kill you. So, like, if you didn't like your neighbor, twisted his light bulb or something, so his light wouldn't turn on at night. And
yeah, that's a good one. The Christmas one is good. It's got the guy who played the chick that played Flo in Alice, and Ed Asner as a ghost.
Yeah.
In this, that's
the one
where
they try to keep them in the house.
Yeah, and they find them. Yeah. And the other one is when they're portrayed as a movie, and they go to Hollywood.
I don't know if I remember that one.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. Can't remember the dude that plays.
It's available for me to stream the entire series on one of my apps. I'm not sure which one. I think it's Hulu. I think. Have to watch them again. I do love that show. Another one of my favorites is that guy who was a demon, but he was trying to have a normal baby. And it wasn't working out for him. And Fox Mulder was following him around.
Yeah. Yeah, kept finding him digging in the yard at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor lady. Yeah, that was sort of like the, there was a couple that were like Rosemary's Baby type of theme. There was one of any, okay, any of the ones that have the Mafoon, the guys who search for extraterrestrial life, the guy, the long-haired hippie guy who lives in the trailer, has all this equipment.
The lone gunman?
Well, he's not one of them. It's an episode where Mulder finds, I can't remember how he comes across it. Anyway, he ends up being taken by the aliens to his life, and he's on these powerful meds or whatever. It's very very in very very deep. I mean, you gotta follow it from the start. In fact, it might be a two-parter.
Yeah,
and
that
Lone Gunman and those guys are great.
Yeah, I thought the show was halfway decent too, but it didn't last very long, did it?
Yeah, it's like that his name is Vincent Black. He played the android in Alien.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
He had a spinoff sort of the X-Files, and it didn't last very long either.
Yeah, what the heck is it? Yeah, I remember Bishop was his character's name on Aliens.
Yeah. And I think his last name is Black.
Yeah, what the heck is this here? Yeah, that's a good idea, man. Bishop should go.
Yeah, there are some disturbing ones, like the interbred brothers, three of them. Mom was living under the bed. She had no arms or legs.
Yeah. Oh, it says his name was Lance Henriksen.
Lance Henriksen, yeah, Black, that's it. Gee, that was way off.
Actually, I should say
I think I'm thinking of the girl from Farscape. Vivian Black or something. I'd have loved to have been a writer. You know, I guess it was Chris Carter. Like Josh Wheaton was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Chris Carter was the genius behind the X-Files, I guess.
Oh, damn. He just died. Kay and I earlier, we were talking about Rip Taylor, and I wasn't sure if he was still alive or not. And it said he passed away 4 years ago.
Rip Torn? Rip Taylor.
Rip Taylor.
Okay.
He
crazy dude.
He opened up a lot of the Jackass movies with his confetti and stuff.
Yeah, got that weird laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, another good one, X-Files, was one with Charles Nelson Reilly. He's like an author, and they're telling him a story of what happened.
Oh, yeah. Charles Nelson Reilly.
It's the only thing I think I've ever liked anything that he's done. I remember him, Ghost of Mrs. Muir.
That's a good movie. It's one
did
of Kay's favorites.
Did they redo that?
I don't think they did. I hope not. I hate when they remake them.
Yeah, the woman with Hope Lang on the TV series, I think.
Let's see.
I think he knew about the ghost. Okay, we're approaching the end of summer, which means football.
Yep.
who's going to win this coming year?
The Browns.
Didn't Rodgers go to another, isn't Rodgers playing somewhere else? Isn't he at didn't he leave Green Bay?
Did he leave Green Bay?
I thought he did. He was not happy there.
Mm-hmm.
I have to look it up.
They have not remade The Ghost and Mrs. Muir.
He was not in it?
No, they did not remake it.
Oh,
still only,
okay.
Which is fine by me. Little Rex Harrison and
Rex Harrison, that's who that ghost was, that's right. Yeah, I don't know. Was TV better back with the sensors all over it?
You know,
everything was happy days.
I don't know. I prefer older TV shows to most of the newer ones, so I don't know.
Some of them are just hard to watch, though, that were prime time.
Yeah. Well, Kay and I have been rewatching from the beginning the old series Coach.
Oh, yeah. Great actor. Craig T. Nelson is one of the most versatile actors. You know, he was in Poltergeist, the original Poltergeist. He's done horror. He's done the Coach comedy sitcom. And then he was The District was a cop series.
Yeah.
He was great in all of them. Very few actors can avoid the stereotype and be able to act in every different genre.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we just watched.
And I think Tom Skerritt is another. Get away with it.
I love Tom Skerritt.
I was surprised a guy like Carol O'Connor could beat the stereotype of Archie Bunker in Heat of the Night.
Yeah.
He did a good job.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
But,
we just watched the episode of Coach called Christmas of the Van Dams, and it's the one where Luther, played by Jerry Van Dyke, finds out that he has relatives near, and he ends up getting a hold of them, and they invite him to this family reunion Christmas party, and he takes Craig T. Nelson with him because he's nervous. And while they're standing there in the front at the front door, you know, they're just standing inside, and he's looking around, and he says, "I don't know, Hayden. None of these people even look like me." And right after he says that, Dick Van Dyke strolls across the room.
Okay, I never thought of that. Yeah, I remember him on Dick Van Dyke's show, where he was the crazy brother. He could only perform when he was sleepwalking.
Yeah, yeah. He was also in one of my favorite John Wayne movies too. He was in McClintock.
Oh, really?
Yep. Yeah, he played Wayne's daughter's first love interest in the movie, and then she switched over to Patrick Wayne.
Oh. Well, we're a little right at an hour, Stephen.
Yeah.
You want to say anything more?
No, just it was fun hanging out. And, look forward to next month, which will be what date will that be on? Let's see here. Can't believe we're already going into July.
1, 2, 3, like a Thursday.
No, it'll be on the
31st. So we'll be, I think,
28th.
Oh.
It'll be the 28th.
Okay.
Yep, wow. I got it up right now. I'll fix that too.
Well, by that time, all our birthdays will have gone past. We'll have circled the sun one too many times.
Yeah, that's for sure. I have a sound clip in the studio. For anybody that calls in and wishes me a happy birthday, I got a sound clip of DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy saying, "I'd give real money if he'd shut up."
Oh, the best one by McCoy is you green blooded goblin or whatever it is. All right. Well, tomorrow night is at ATLV here. We'll be AP Taylor, Debbie Lee, and myself. Talk about peaches. So participate. Starts at 8, I believe, Pacific, 11 Eastern. I don't know how those guys, how you guys do it late, so late at night. It's like ball games. You know, we have 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock start times. You guys got 10 o'clock start times?
Well, no, we start doing earlier now. We don't do any shows on Saturdays anymore. We just do the one show every Wednesday. At 7:30, sometimes 7, depends on what's going on.
I was talking about the ball games, but yeah, that too.
The ball games, yeah. When they're on the West Coast and they don't start till 10 p.m. here, I don't usually watch them. Actually, I don't watch much baseball anymore like I used to, because we don't have TV anymore. So I have to choose between on I think Apple TV, Monday Night Baseball. So if I want to watch whatever team's playing on that one. And then I think it's Peacock has Sunday morning baseball that I have whatever they're showing I can watch. But I actually think I enjoy watching teams I don't really care about because I don't get upset. I just say, oh, that was a nice play.
We used to roll up socks and have them a basket by each chair. You throw socks at the TV. That's not a foul. What are you talking about? I think we're going to go out with a one-hit wonder song. Does anybody remember? Well, come on. Come on. Why is it not going? There it goes. Cherry Hill Park.
Oh, yeah.
Mary Hill used to hang out in Cherry Hill Park. The game she played lasted all day to way after dark. All the girls, they criticized her, but all the guys just idolized her, 'cause Mary Hill was such a thrill after dark in Cherry Hill Park. Game.
ask yourself how many Mary Hills were alive in the United States when that song came out, and how did it affect their life? You know, if you think about it. That's Billy Joe Royal, One Hit Wonder, Cherry Hill Park, which is a real place, I guess. I think it's in, remember, maybe North Carolina, maybe New Jersey. Anyway, thanks for hanging with me, Steven. Do it again next month.
All righty. Take it easy, Hatter.
Talk about it. Anything but poetry. Yeah. Give the wind a kiss for me.
Will do.
Okay.
Good night.
See you later. Yeah.